Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Talkers Magazine calls Jim Blasingame one of the best talk show hosts in the industry.
Now remember, I do my best work when I'm being worshipped as a god.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for hanging around with us today. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. If you've been listening already, well, this makes you a highly intelligent individual. And I know you feel that way because the more you're around our Brain Trust members, the smarter you get. And the reason I know that is because I do. I get smarter every time I visit with our Brain Trust members, like our outstanding guest this half hour, Mr. David Dossie. He's our resident intellectual property attorney in the Brain Trust. Now, in the old days, they called them patent attorneys, and they still do patents. But I think the correct term, the 21st century term, is intellectual property attorney, and he's also our good friend. David, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Jim. Always glad to be here.
It's good to have you back. Okay, here's a couple of little factoids that we're ready for you today, David. 1816, John Adamson of Boston received a patent for a dry dock. How about that?
Interesting.
1816. Now I don't have the drawings. I don't have the drawings in front of me. But that's the news. All right. Here's another one. 1884, Percy Everett received a patent for the first coin-operated weighing machine.
Hmm.
Remember the weighing machines you
sure.
go by and put a penny in and get a little fortune and you weight and that kind of
right.
thing. 1884. How about that?
Yeah.
Have you got any stories like that?
Sure. Well, most often people think that, all these successful products that you see out there were developed after years and years of experimentation. So I've got a list of a few that are just developed, with not so sexy beginnings. For instance, how do you think the Slinky toy came about?
Well, I don't know how it came about, but I remember when it came about.
Well, it was originally an engineer was trying to produce an anti-vibration device for ship instruments.
Huh.
And ended up with the Slinky.
I'll be darned. Well, yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. And then another...
Where the Slinky takes the shock and doesn't pass it along to the instrument.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And what year was that, you know?
I don't know.
Well, the Slinky came out as a toy back in the 50s. Mm-hmm. Do you know that?
Well, I knew it was at least 40-plus years ago.
You knew it was way before you were born, right? Right,
exactly.
David? Yeah, no, I think it was probably... I think I remember Slinkies as a little kid, back probably 57 or something like that, 58, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay. What about the Kleenex tissue? What do you think that was originally designed
the
for?
The Kleenex? What did you say?
The Kleenex tissue.
Tissue.
Yep.
Hmm. Well, I would have thought it would have been designed as a Kleenex tissue.
Right. It was originally designed as a gas mask filter.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of flimsy, though, for gas masks.
They
realized after the first guy died from not getting... it filtered the gas, but it was so flimsy, it fell apart. So they said, we better find another use for this, right?
Exactly.
All right. What else?
The famous Post-it notes developed by 3M.
World is surrounded by Post-it notes.
Yeah. Well, those came about because one of the workers at 3M sang in his church choir and marked pages in his hymnal with scraps of paper, and that's what gave him the idea for Post-it notes.
Huh. And that came from 3M, didn't it?
Right.
Now, sadly, though, the guy who invented that for 3M, that became 3M's property, didn't it?
Oh, sure.
He wound up with just a gold watch and a retirement party, probably.
Probably. Right? Well, his picture is probably on the wall there.
Right. So what else? Got another one?
Then I've got a few about people that you would think would be much more successful than they are. For instance, Charles Goodyear, founder of the Great Rubber Company.
Tire. Mm-hmm.
Did you know that he spent most of his life in debtor's prison because he had so many failures over and over again?
Wow.
And when he died... his estate was $200,000 in debt.
Wow. But yet, we owe the pneumatic tire to him, don't we?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and that's something. Yeah, I've heard of other stories like that. What was the guy's name that invented the? That was an early adopter of the video record, not video recorder, but the motion picture machine. I've forgotten the guy's name. There's a movie about this guy. And you know, he was one of the very first guys before Edison or whoever else wound up perfecting this thing. And, you know, he wound up dying broke.
Yeah.
Happens all the time. No, we don't want our listeners to do that, though, do we?
No.
And so when we come back after these messages, you're going to tell them how they can avoid that, aren't you?
Hopefully.
Yeah, we're going to do our best to do that, folks. If you've got an idea, and guess what? I'm going to say that you probably got an idea that you don't even know you have. We're going to help you uncover those ideas and turn them into profit, perhaps. Turn them into so that you don't wind up in debtor's prison. 20 till, I'm Jim Blasingame. We'll be right back with David Dawson.
Hey,
back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and David Dawson is our guest and our good friend. He's an intellectual property attorney, and that's what we're talking about, your intellectual property. And David, I wonder about how many people, you gave us some great examples of some early, some classic inventions, and the last one, the sad one, was Mr. Goodyear, who basically invented the pneumatic tire, the rubber tire, and got us all rolling a lot better, but he didn't profit himself from that. I don't know if his family wind up profiting from it, but I wonder how many stories there are, and I'm sure that the stories are legion, of the individuals who invented something and either didn't realize what they had and somebody else just wandered off with it, or they realized what they had, but because they didn't do a good job of protecting it, somebody else stole it, and it wound up becoming rich. And the original, the person whose mind the idea originated in, and maybe even whose hands crafted the first prototype, those people wind up with nothing.
Absolutely, the problem you run into is a lot of people. Creative people aren't risk takers, and if you're not a risk taker, you're not going to make the leap to try to protect, you know, all your ideas with the understanding that not everyone is going to be successful. In fact, very few will be successful, but hopefully those that are, you know, far outweigh the investment you made in the ones that aren't.
Well, see, I think I have a little bit of a different spin on that for small business owners. I think small business owners are risk takers, but I think that we have a problem not appreciating what we've thought of. I think we underestimate the value of our ideas. What do you think?
Oh, without a doubt. You know, most small businesses, if you're talking about a 2 to 10 person operation, a service business, you know, dry cleaner or what have you, they may feel that they don't have any intellectual property. And even as our law firm, you know, we have ways we do things that may not even be the best ways, but it's still nonetheless intellectual property for us.
Mm-hmm. So how do we help us out, David, and help us establish some intellectual property goals for next year?
Sure. Well, one of the first ones that we often see is just recognizing small businesses need to recognize the intellectual property that they have and make sure all their employees know about the intellectual property. Mm-hmm. And that can be as simple as the way you do things. If you want to keep those confidential, you need to have confidentiality agreements in place. You need to apply appropriate protections so that not everyone in the company knows exactly how something is done. You know, if you want to keep it confidential, otherwise it will never be.
Mm-hmm. So if you've got a system that you're using for managing customers, the people, the only person who really knows exactly how this works is your sales manager, let's say, and your general manager. Have those two people sign non-disclosure and non-compete clauses.
Exactly.
Now, those are two different documents, aren't they?
It depends. You know, employment agreements often contain both those.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, but it's two different. But my point is, it's two different sets of languages.
Absolutely.
You've got to write a non-compete and a non-disclosure.
Right.
Confidentiality. I guess I should say.
Right.
Don't you think that small business owners are uncomfortable using those?
I think a lot of people are afraid of employment agreements because it seems to have some permanence to your relationship. You'd rather be the good guy working on a handshake.
Yeah.
But the importance of those really can't be overstated.
Yeah, in the old days, a lot of small business owners didn't like them, and they may still not like them, because they felt that it bound them to the employee in a more rigid way than they wanted to do. But and I kind of understood that when there wasn't that much of a threat on the other end, you know, from the employee. But in the 21st century, some employees could be devastating to your organization if they were able to take what you know and take who you know and the things that you've developed, if they're able to take that and just wander out of your business with it. You wouldn't let them wander out of your warehouse with your inventory, would you?
Right. And nowadays, you know, how easy is it to plug a portable hard drive into a USB port and download, you know, virtually a whole network in a half hour?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Lots of stuff. I think the big thing, I think it's easy for a small business owner, David, to see that we don't want an employee taking our customer list away.
Right.
We can see that we don't want them taking, you know, our financial records away and that sort of thing. But I think it's harder for us to see that there's value in the way we do business. And what I'd like to recommend, David, is that small business owners look around them and say, okay, what are we doing that really works for us? And how do we sort of get that documented and get it on paper and turn it into a system that's not just this idea in our mind, but something we actually document and identify and then improve?
That's excellent.
Yeah. So, all right. Now what's the next thing we need to do for our intellectual property goals?
Okay. One of the other most common things that we see is people or small businesses, you know, if it's a tech company, they may have a patent or two, and they'll apply for, you know, several other patent applications. And people often don't market products or release products until a patent issues. And that's such a mistake because the term or the length of time can be 2 to 2.5 years before mm-hmm. a patent issues, mm-hmm. and you're missing out on tremendous opportunity.
And as long as you file for the patent, the 12-month commercialization, I'm going to ask you about that. We're going to take a quick break. I'm going to ask you about that question. There's an issue, folks, with having your product in service before you patent it, and we'll ask David about that right after these messages. It's 10 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's 7 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate, and David Dossi is our guest. David, give us your website, please.
It is invention-protection.com.
And that is not your grandfather's patent attorney website, folks. Invention-protection.com. If you want to see what an intellectual property attorney's website looks like, that's where you want to go. And David, anybody who's listening who would like for you to work with them, I know you'll be glad to. And folks, you don't have to be able to see your intellectual property attorney or your patent attorney face to face. David is also, in addition to being a member of my brain trust, he is my intellectual property attorney and a darn good one too, David. My organization, we compliment you every week on the good work that you do. And I appreciate that very much.
Well,
and you and I have actually never met face-to-face.
That's right.
And we do a lot of work together. So, folks, it works. I encourage you to check it out and check his website out. And David's a good man. David, you mentioned as we went to the break about the don't wait. Once you start the patent process, don't wait to commercialize your invention.
Right.
Okay. Now, There is a problem, and I know we've talked about this before, but since you brought that up, I want to remind people about this. If you commercialize your invention prior to patenting it, that starts a clock, doesn't it?
Yes. In the United States, we're fortunate that you can offer your invention for sale, and then still have 12 months to file a patent application.
But that clock starts when you make that first sale, doesn't it?
Well, actually, when you make the first offer for sale.
Right. When you say, yeah, if somebody can document that you tried to sell it to somebody as a product or whatever, if you don't get the patent process started, is that right?
Right. If you don't get an application
filed, you have to have a dated application inside of 12 months. Then you've basically lost that patent, haven't you?
Right. And another important consideration is that 12-month grace period is only in the United States. Most foreign countries don't acknowledge that. So if you think you have an invention that has a broader application that you would like protection outside the U.S., you better not offer it for sale until you do have a patent application filed.
Right. Okay, so if you think it has global opportunity,
right,
then you're saying that in other countries there is no clock, that once you offer it, you're foreclosed?
Exactly.
Wow.
In most countries, actually.
And that's the word they use, folks. You're foreclosed from getting a patent after that 12-month period. Now, can somebody else patent that? Could somebody else take that idea and patent it? Or is it then become unpatentable?
Right. If it's out there, you know, if it's been published or it's been on sale so that other people can view that this has already been invented, that will stop others from patenting it.
So it becomes unpatentable?
Right, public domain.
Wow. In 12 months? That seems awfully harsh, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
To me it does. Anyway, all right, so let's move on. What are some other examples? Folks, we're trying to help you establish an intellectual property goal, set of goals for 2006. Go ahead.
Well, the next point is, you know, educate your clients on critical intellectual property mistakes to avoid. And one of the biggest one is what we just mentioned, the deadlines for foreign patent applications. Typical route is you file a U.S. patent application, you have 12 months to file what's called a PCT application or international application that gives you the right to file applications in over 130 other countries. So you usually need to keep in mind that 12 months is a key time frame that you need to be aware of.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that goes hand in hand with that is proper use of your trademarks. You know, everyone has trademarks or service marks, and there are actually guidelines for proper use of a trademark and service mark, and you'll find those online, but you should read them and make sure your marketing people understand how to use them.
Well, and you know, David, you said something a minute ago I'm going to correct you on. You said everybody has them. Well, I will say it this way. Every small business owner has a service mark, but that doesn't mean that they have actually tried to register it.
Exactly.
They have assets that could be service marked or trademarked and then registered, but they may not be doing it. And that's the whole purpose behind our conversation today, David, is to get people to pay more attention, to realize that just because you're a small business owner, even if you're not an inventor and you're not trying to invent things, you have intellectual property that you need to protect and you need to develop. And David and I are going to continue to talk about this, but it's going to have to be another day. David, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Jim.
I enjoyed it. Give us your website again, please.
It's invention-protection.com.
Check it out when you get a chance, folks. Thanks, David. Happy holidays.
You too.
Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'll see you one more hour on the other side of the news. Stay with me.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.